Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to another edition of Global Leader Radio, the show with a particular focus on those individuals and organizations doing an exceptional job of identifying, attracting, developing, and retaining high potential talent. The purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all those who seek to optimize their leadership acumen. So we achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways to include resources and advice that have led to the personal and professional success of our guests. So today we introduce someone who personifies the innovative side of leadership, along with another who has a great history of leadership through his service to our country. So they both have impressive resumes of success, and we're looking to learn quite a bit today. So no pressure to either of you guys. So with that overview, we welcome today's guests, Mr. Matt Hames and Colonel Marshall S. Irvin, Jr. So Colonel Marshall Irvin is the commander of the 94th Mission Support Group at Dobbins Air Reserve Base here in Georgia. So he leads a team of 930 military and civilian personnel, like a small city almost, right?
Yes, that's about right. It is a small city.
Yeah, overseeing all the base support organizations to include the aerial port, communications, contracting, civil engineering, logistics, readiness, force support, and security forces. So Colonel Irvin received his commission in 1984 as a graduate of the Air Force Reserve Officer Training Corps at the University of Southwestern Louisiana, part of my right up the street from my old hometown, Lake Charles, Louisiana. And after serving 8.5 years of active duty, he entered the Air Force Reserve in 1996 at the 88th Aerial Port Squadron, 514th Air Mobility Wing, McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey. So Colonel Irvin has commanded the 514th Airlift Control Flight, the 514th AMW, McGuire Air Force Base, and a host of other impressive squadrons and reservists. So he's also commanded the 403rd Wing, the Mission Support Group, out of Kessler Air Force Base in Mississippi, right?
Kessler.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So his educational background, as we said before, began with a Bachelor of Arts in Mass Communication from USL in Lafayette, Louisiana. And I think it's called now the University of Louisiana.
That's correct. They bought about four or five other universities around the state, and they've made the University of Louisiana system. It's now the largest university in the state.
Wow. Larger than LSU.
Oh, we've actually always been very, very close to LSU. Mm-hmm. LSU has a name and they have the football team. We have the size and the very, very smart people.
And the great food.
And magnificent food.
And you also have a master's in public administration from the University of the Philippines in 1990. The Air Command and Staff College. You also went through the Joint Forces Staff College in Norfolk, Virginia, and the Air War College at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama. So the Colonel, obviously you've had numerous major awards, and we're glad to have you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And so we also have Matt Hames. Matt is the CEO of Accru Wealth, a comprehensive wealth strategy firm headquartered right around the corner from KSU over in Woodstock, Georgia.
That's right.
So Matt holds a professional designation of Certified Trust and Financial Advisor, the CTFA designation. And prior to assuming the leadership position with Accru, Matt served as Research Associate and Financial Advisor for our good friends at the Hensler Financial Group. So Matt was responsible for the establishment and development of the firm's relationship with First Cherokee State Bank, which led to the creation of CNT Financial in 2001. So as I noted from your bio, 10 years later, you led CNT through a redesign of its business model that changed the brand to Accru and meaningfully enhanced the delivery of the brand experience to the public. And we're going to chat a little bit more about what that means and how you did that.
Sure.
So since opening, Accru has been featured in one of my favorite magazines, Fast Company. You've also been featured in the Financial Brand and other local, regional, as well as national publications, recognizing the breakthrough innovation represented in your brand and your delivery model. So very active in the community. You're on the executive board and finance committee of the Kennesaw State University Athletic Association, that cutting-edge athletic association,
right?
That's right. Yeah, and you serve as director on the following boards, which is the Cherokee County Sheriff's Foundation, the Cherokee County Hospital Authority, and Timothy and Barnabas, an active member of First Baptist Church of Woodstock, and your wife is Deanna. You have a son named Jesse and a daughter named Ella. So Matt graduated with a Bachelor of Business Administration degree with a major in management and specialization in entrepreneurship and small business management from Kennesaw State University, where he was a four-year letterman or scholarship in basketball. And you are also a graduate at the Cannon Trust School. So again, gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us and taking a little time out of your busy schedule. So welcome to Global Leader Radio.
Glad to be here, Alvin. I got to tell you, next time, don't ever introduce me behind a colonel. I appreciate it, but
impressive.
I'm just glad to be here. Okay? I'm just glad to be here.
Well, just doing my part.
You certainly are present and accounted for, both of you gentlemen, looking sharp as always. So, so let's start with Colonel Irvin. So, let's chat a little bit about who's the great colonel. So, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Great. I don't know about great. I'm just somebody that grew up in the 60s and the 70s and wanted to make a difference in the world. Didn't want to be somebody that worked 9 to 5, and I wanted a way out of where it was. You know, grew up at the time of the Civil Rights Movement, and we really had no idea where we were going to be, what we're going to go, and what our opportunities were. And I went away to college, and I saw something that appealed to me, and that was service. And it was service via the military. So I took it on to do it for 4 years. And next May of 2013 will be my 29th year.
Wow.
So I'm really kind of enjoying what I'm doing.
So either it grew on you or you grew on it.
I think it was a little bit both of us, because I'm one of those outspoken people. I'm surprised I've gotten as far just because I am so outspoken. I tend to say things that need to be said. Made life interesting.
So I like that. I like that. So let's talk a little bit about your focus in terms of what you do every day. So what in a normal, I've never sat across from a colonel. So so this is my opportunity to find out, what does a colonel do normally in the normal scope of a week in a day?
Day in a life, right?
That's a loaded, yeah. That's a loaded question. If you ask my troops, I do nothing. But tell everybody else what to do. Basically, essentially, I'm the base commander. There's an installation commander who is the overall commander of the entire installation. There's a base commander, the guy that takes care of everything else, and that would be me. If it's not flying the aircraft, if it's not fixing the aircraft, and it's not fixing the people, everything else belongs to me. So I have the largest number of people. I am there to make sure that the installation is maintained and running so it's ready to achieve the national objectives that the administration proposes to us or tells us we have to do. I do that every day just to make sure everything's there. If the president calls and says he needs our airplanes will be ready to go along with those people. I make sure those people are trained, make sure they're ready to go, make sure that they have everything that they need. And while they're here, I make sure that all of their needs are attended to. So everybody in some way, form, or fashion comes through me in some way.
Wow. That's impressive. And so I would imagine that you're speaking primarily about the military aspects, but because they are married to civilians,
yes, correct.
I guess that kind of encompasses civilian as well, right?
Yes. I have about altogether probably about 500 civilians every day that work for me. And it's about 400 or so military people. So that installation is run mainly by civilians,
okay,
because it's a reserve base. But we have a military force there, but it's a smaller group. And they are usually the leadership, okay, in some way, fashion. And the civilians there are there as our continuity, because as military members, we rotate in and out every so many years. So you have to have continuity. So you have those civilians that have been there for long periods of time that keep the continuity and keep things running for us.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting. So when you think through kind of the aspects of leadership versus management, tell us a little bit about what you see as the differences between the two.
Well, the technical definitions are probably pretty simple, and probably your audience understands that and knows what they are. Definition, the difference between leadership and management. Management is managing processes, managing things. Mm-hmm. Leadership is leading people or handling people or dealing with people. And it's important to understand the difference. It's very, very hard to manage people in a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. It's easier to lead people. If there's a leader, people will glean to them. They'll come to them. They'll follow them, even in difficult and hard times. That's what we specialize in.
Correct.
You know, for instance, the military member, something blows up or somebody shoots at something, the average person ducks.
Right.
That's what they do. They duck. We stand up and go toward what's being shot.
Interesting.
So we have to build leaders that when something it goes awry, something is tragic, you grieve, you hurt, and you get up and you have to move. Because it's our job to make sure that whatever's out there to hurt you doesn't get here.
Okay.
That's our mission. So we have to be able to manage and manage our processes and manage our procedures. But we have to get people to believe in us that when times are hard, times are difficult and very even dangerous, that they'll go into the danger and overcome the danger. That's our job. We want to be faster, quicker, and more lethal than our enemy. We want to stop them. We want them to think, no, I don't think I want to mess with those guys. That's what we do. And you need leaders to do that. You can't necessarily have a bunch of managers. And leadership and management is not peculiar or particular to just the military. It's out in the business where any well-run company,
right,
any company that's on the leading edge, any company that has more market share than them has great leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. They have to convince the person out there trying to buy their product that this product is worth your time, it's worth your money, and you know what? Not be arrogant, but this product is better than my competitors' products. So leadership does that, not management. That's the difference, and that's why leadership is so important.
Yeah, excellent. And thanks for that point of clarification, too. So the question I have above and beyond that is, so what type of person gets involved in the military such that they're able to step forward and have that special ability to really separate between the management and the leadership and know when to step forward? Because I've never shot a gun in my life, and I can expect that if one is shot near me, I won't be stepping forward. So maybe I'm not the right person. Maybe is that something that there are traits, or perhaps there's something that a person can learn? What's the makeup of a military leader?
Our world is structured, and although we have a structured world, we have a world that's chaos. My motto for my people is we organize chaos. That's what we do.
So I like it.
Those people that step up, that want to be, they enjoy for some reason organizing the chaos. That's one of the things I love the most about my job is when bringing order to the chaos. And I'm my best when I step into a mess and I'm directing things around me and trying to make sure things come back together as they are. And after that's done and things are running, I have to go into the next mess because I get bored. I just get bored. So that's kind of a trait for those who love the military. They love the order. And when you become a member of the military, after you go through your basic training and you do a lot of your skills training and you go off to a place to defend the nation, what you're trying to do is bring order to the chaotic situation. And those are the people who charge into the bullets or charge into the place after the bombs exploded because they want to bring order. They want to protect. That's another one, bringing order. And you want to protect. Mm-hmm. You have this desire to keep safe. And so I think that's why a lot of your firemen and your policemen are firemen and policemen. They have a desire to keep safe.
Wow, important. So you mentioned a couple of things. You mentioned practice and training. So it's very difficult to keep order and be able to protect people if you're not clear on exactly the protocols involved.
Correct.
So that requires lots of practice, correct?
Yes, it does. We practice. That's basically all we do. Whenever there's not a conflict, we're practicing for the next conflict, whatever the conflict is or may be. We have techniques and procedures. We have tactics that come from other wars, that comes from the particular war we have now, knowing the enemy that we have. And we take those things and we use them to continue to better ourselves. Business is the same way.
Right.
You know what your market is. You know what the people want. You know what they need. And you take all that and you make a product or you provide a service that they want or that they need. You have to know who your enemy is. You have to know who your customer is. You know, the military is really not that much different at all. People think it is. Yeah, we shoot guns and drop bombs and fly fast airplanes, but our principles and our procedures are mainly the same.
And I would guess that most of business, well, let me put it this way. Most of business and most of the military kind of share best practices between one another.
Oh, yeah, we do that all the time. Our Lean and Six Sigma processes we brought into the military are mainly from the outside world. A lot of our business training that we have to run our processes, because when we're not fighting a war, we still have to do things efficiently, because we are given taxpayer dollars to do those things efficiently.
Right.
We not only have to be effective, but we have to be efficient.
Okay.
So we get a lot of our efficiencies, particularly our lean processes, from places on the outside. We'll bring professionals in. We pay them a fee. They teach our people. They license our people. We begin to use those processes, begin to use those procedures to increase our efficiencies and even to increase our effectiveness. So, you know, our business, what relationship we have with business is extremely important, extremely important.
Well, that's great to hear, because I know that there's two dimensions based on what I'm picking up from your conversation. One dimension is what happens in wartime, and the other dimension, which is what happens in peacetime.
Yes.
And, of course, between the two, there's much more peacetime than wartime. Am I right?
It depends. We've been in war for the last 20 or so years since Desert Storm. The war has never really ended.
Okay.
In the eyes of the average American, our lives are so good.
Mm-hmm.
Our economy is chucking along, although it's hiccuping now so well that the average American does not hear about the war. We are here to make sure that the average American can continue to enjoy their life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As prescribed by the Constitution, we are here to ensure that remains a factor and a fact for Maddie's businesses and anybody else who wants to start a business, the new entrepreneurs out there who haven't even started a business, the security that is needed. We are here to make sure that happens. Now, when war is not in the news, that doesn't mean things aren't going on all over the country 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, because they have been since Desert Storm. We just don't talk about it, but we defend against it. All the time.
Which is why your light is always on.
Always on.
So what are some of the important building blocks of leadership when you sit down and think through the raw materials that go into the equation of building leaders? The largest raw material is the people themselves.
Correct.
So when those people walk in, how do you tell? How can you kind of work with them and help them to understand leadership is that way and management is this way? So again, what are some of the important building blocks of leadership?
Well, to tell you how we start this process, we have what's called basic training. We have what's called a thawing and a refreezing process. You bring the average person, I don't know if you've seen Officer and a Gentleman, one of my favorite movies of all times, and you bring these people in with all these talents and all these abilities and all these attitudes, and you thaw them, and then you refreeze them in the mold that you need them to be in. After that happens, in various leadership training and various skill training, you'll learn some of those foundational blocks of leadership. In the Air Force, we have our three core values, which is first integrity.
Okay.
First integrity, service before self, and excellence in all that we do. That's our core values. Every airman, after he's refreezed, that is just constantly placed in front of them all the time. They have to walk, talk, and live. Integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. Now, that encompasses our core values, which in Air Force we believe is a foundation for what we do. Now, some other foundational things that I consider as important is competence, concern for others, a good listener, accountability, courage, character, humility. Very, very important. Humility is, I believe, a big foundational block to building good leaders. You know, we bring some of the best people in the world into the armed forces, some of the smartest people in the world. They decide they want to serve. And as you remember from an officer and a gentleman, some of those guys were really, really smart.
Very smart.
We get some really smart people, and they come in with some attitude.
You know? Like mayonnaise, right?
Yeah, there you go, just like mayonnaise. And we have to take that raw talent. We got to break it down. And you saw Lou Gossett Jr. played the drill sergeant.
Right.
He broke it down. In the end, mayonnaise would become a great person for the Department of Defense. You know, if you can break them down, because they have raw talent, and you have to use that raw talent, but you have to refreeze them, and you have to just deluge them constantly with excellence, service for self, excellence in all that you do, You have to constantly tell them about humility, because people have different talents and they pick up on things differently.
Right.
And a lot of times it's just humans, you know. That's why we have the NFL, which is only less than 1% of the population.
Yes.
NFL, the NBA, and the American Baseball Association, they're only less than 1% of the population, but they're so good at what they do that they can often become very arrogant. So humility is just a really big deal, because we have those people that pick up on things quicker, faster. Yeah.
And that reminds me of Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, and the Level 5 Leader definitely has humility.
And that's a big deal.
So as we pivot slightly away from Colonel Irvin, we're going to pivot toward Matt Hames. So, Matt, a crew wealth. So what's in a name?
Well, you know, we established the Accrue brand, if you will, around what we felt like was some truths that we believed about the industry that we operate in. And, you know, to speak to what the Colonel's saying, that, you know, values kind of become the foundation of anything that you do, right? Whether it's your life and the way you live it, whether it's the place that you work, the place that you worship, whatever it may be. What we did is started looking at our organization a couple of years ago when we went through our rebrand and redesign and said, listen, what is it we believe? Why are we here? And really try to start with that question. And really that takes you to a values conversation. You start to establish what it is you stand for. And then once we did that, it really turned into translating those values tangibly into an offering we felt like provided value to the people we wanted to do business with. And out of that process of crafting what we stand for, our core brand and the elements contained therein, we then started looking at a name. And then you get to a place where you say, okay, well, what represents best what we're trying to offer? And the naming process, I get asked about it a pretty good bit. We had well over 200 names. It was honestly a fun process, but it was more frustrating than I thought it would be. I thought, you know, listen, we're going to have a meeting, and surely a few of us can come up with a good name here in a couple hours. And months later, literally, we went from north of 200 different names all the way down to one. And Accrue, we feel like, really represents what we do for our clients. You know, it's about this gathering of resources. You know, the primary role in our organization that interfaces with our client acts as a strategist of sorts, who sources talent and expertise from multiple disciplines and accrues that to the client's benefit. And that's really what we're trying to accomplish.
Ah, so it's somewhat of an accounting term as well.
It absolutely is an accounting term. Yeah, we spelled it different.
Yes, you did.
We spelled it different, but it is absolutely an accounting term.
One less C and no E, right?
That's right.
Understood.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about Matt Hames. You are a Cobb County Woodstock native.
Cherokee County, actually.
Cherokee County.
Okay. My hometown would disown me.
I'm sorry.
If I didn't nail that down. Now, I went to Kennesaw.
Was a softball question.
There it was. Absolutely. No, I'm a Cherokee County boy. I'm one of the few left around, probably, that I was born and raised in Cherokee County. My parents are both from Cherokee County, so we're local. We're local folks, absolutely.
Okay, and so what made you decide to go to Kennesaw State University on a basketball scholarship? Because certainly all the D1s were out there, you know, raving to have your services.
Yeah, they were lined up, right? They were lined up, and I chose to practice at Kennesaw for 4 years.
That's right.
This is how I like to say, you know, people say, well, you played at Kennesaw, and I have to be honest and say I practiced an awful lot. So Kennesaw was, you know, when I came out of high school in the mid-90s, it was an interesting time for me. I played basketball my entire life, and I thought, well, you know, where do I have the opportunity to possibly do that again? And I did look at several different schools. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, Kennesaw was a Division II school at the time. You know, we weren't D1 back then.
Okay.
And it was a good school. My father went there for his first couple of years of college. Mm-hmm. And it was local. That mattered to me. But what I really liked was the business school and the educational elements and benefits that the university brought to bear. I felt like it was a fast-growing environment, which is proven to be the case since I've been gone, especially. And, you know, I thought, you know, Division II is probably a good place for me to get a good education and get some exposure to some good basketball, and I was able to do that, and it was a blessing. Came out of school with no debt, which that's not a bad thing. So I'm certainly blessed
for
that.
Very good thing.
Yeah, that's important for a guy who actually espouses wealth.
Exactly.
So what did you take away from your athletic career that you've now used in your business career?
You know, Alvin, I've learned more since I quit playing basketball about the things that happened while I was playing basketball, if that makes any sense.
You got smarter after you left, is that it?
A lot, yeah, and I'm still
always
getting there.
Happens that way.
Yeah, I'm still getting there. I wouldn't say I am smart, but for sure, while I was walking through it, it was tough, right? I mean, you go through, and especially, you know, in my situation, I was not all conference, all world, all team, all anything, right? So I literally sat the bench for 4 years, and that's tough for a kid who's, you know, you want to be the college athlete, but yet you're not getting playing time. But what I was able to do, and my parents helped me with this significantly, is craft a perspective that viewed basketball for what it was. It was an opportunity for me to get an education and to learn a lot. And again, since I've been out, I look back and I learn things like discipline. I learn things like perseverance, patience, work ethic, things that just had to happen in order to be on the team. When I found myself and even daily up against challenges in the business world, it's those experiences I found myself saying, wow, I remember when. And it proved to me, and I didn't realize I was proving it to myself, that I can handle some of this stuff, right? And even when the ball doesn't bounce the way I want it to, really all that's on me is my response.
Right.
And how I respond to those the adversities that we come against. I learned a lot about that in basketball.
And you certainly can control that, obviously.
I can. Yeah. Can't always control the circumstances by any means, but I can certainly affect my response. And it's not always right.
It's a human thing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So
tell us a little bit about the members of Team Accru, both who they are and the role they play in the firm.
Sure. Well, Accru is really anchored in its business model by a role we refer to as a wealth strategist. And when we began to innovate a couple of years ago and change the way we deliver what we deliver, we created this role that's really in the financial services world. It's an industry made up of people who sell a lot of product.
Okay.
And there's a tremendous focus on product. It's all about revenue. It's all about sales. And I think in many ways, as we spent time during our due diligence process designing the Accru business model, asking our communities and asking the public, we interviewed people and we got feedback from people. And we found that it was that sales product focus that has really fostered this chasm between the industry and the big banks and the consumer. And there's this massive distrust, and there's a tremendous amount of bitterness, and then you get bailouts, and you get all this stuff that just piles on top of it that have come out of this great recession that we're still battling through, really. And what we did is we said, what if we put an individual available to the community that is first and foremost product agnostic? They don't sell anything. They're not compensated based on sales. They're there specifically to add value to the life of the individual or the business that they work with by coordinating with subject matter experts in banking, investments, insurance, tax, estate planning, and coordinating that knowledge that the experts have and placing it into a proper context for the client and what's happening in their life.
Okay.
So from our perspective, what we were seeking to do, and it was extremely different for our industry, is to say, really, what we offer is wisdom. And the way we articulate that is it's the knowledge that's a commodity. The products are a commodity. But the proper context with what's happening in our client's life, that application of knowledge to context is really wise in our mind. So what we've tried to do is add value to the access to the products and services you can get anywhere.
Okay.
And, you know, we don't charge a fee for our strategists. Again, they're product agnostic. They don't sell anything. They're just purely there to help find out what's happening in the client's life and improve the interaction of money and life as they do it for their clients.
So when you look at it, that's the way you view Accru, which is life plus the wealth aspects
that's
as
right.
well?
Yeah, it's money plus life. Yeah, it's you know, and what that came out of, Alvin, is the more people we talked to, what we found was this overwhelming response that money in the broad context in our nation is not something that adds joy, enables, or frees up people. In too many contexts, it's a burden, it adds stress, it's a frustration.
Yeah.
And as life happens, it collides head on with the money and the lack thereof or lack of preparation or poor planning, whatever it may be. And we truly exist to try and change the way our clients view money. their money. You know, again, it's not about banking specifically. It's not about investment specifically or insurance specifically. While we transact in all those fields, it's really about their money and how they view it impacting or enabling their life.
Yeah, because that money piece of it is truly the axis or the fulcrum to a lot of other things as well. As we know, the divorce rate is caused in large part by financial issues between man and woman or, you know, significant others. And so that creates some problems if it's not handled correctly. And so you exist in the marketplace to be able to reduce some of that anxiety, make it seem a little bit more simple, and just kind of walk people through the process by holding their hands, correct?
Absolutely. You know, if we can clarify what's happening with their money in their life, and then preparing for what's ahead, and then be there to help them steward that going forward. We're doing our job. We're doing our job.
I'm listening to Matt, and I hear something that he's saying that I think is another tenet of leadership, and that's vision. A crew has a vision, and you know there's a proverb, a scripture that says, "If there's no vision, a people perish." So, as a leader, you have to have vision. You have to develop it. You have to bring it within yourself. If you want to be a manager, because managers are necessary, they're needed. Well, if that's your thing, then you need to go for learning all the techniques and all the skills. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, it's very difficult to be an entrepreneur without vision. And it's very difficult to be a great leader without vision. And appears to me that a crew has vision to see that people have need, to see when you bring life together with finances and see that there's going to be angst and anxiety, and to say, well, you know what, that's coming. And it, as the economy gets worse, things get worse. So let's look at making things better for people. Right. And I think they're going places. You know, you may read about Maddie on Newsweek here.
No doubt about it. Well, you know, we read about him in Fast Company, no doubt. What was the essence of that particular article? Do you remember that one?
Yeah, so Fast Company, we were very, very fortunate to have Fast Company. Much like you, Alvin, Fast Company is one of my favorites. I read that and have read it for a very long time. So when we got the phone call that they wanted to do a piece on us, the perspective they took had a lot to do really with our physical space. And
we're going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah. Be glad to. So it was the design of our retail environment. You know, we didn't design a brick-and-mortar, traditional banking, financial services-type environment. What we wanted to do is create a space that, if we say we believe certain things about even the interaction of money and life, and we represent that we value relationships and conversations, what we wanted to do was create a physical environment that facilitated conversations and could literally represent in a tangible way that money and life interact every day. So, you know, as you well know, we created our own brand and opened a coffee house inside our location. We looked at a lot of different industries. We looked at retail. We looked at hospitality. We looked at financial services, and found that people tend to have life happen a lot in coffee houses in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to drive by many Starbucks or Caribou Coffees to not see the line wrapped around the building or people just sitting there and talking and having conversations. And there's something about coffee that slows you down.
Yeah.
It just causes people to take a deep breath. While it may amp you up with the caffeine, it does slow things down. So we created a space where literally on one half of the space you've got the Copper Coin, which is our coffee brand, taking place. It's a full-service, fully functional, staffed with baristas coffee house. And then on the other half of the space, you've got our wealth strategist anchoring what we characterize as our wisdom bar, and you've got a community conference room, and you've got space where more of the wealth dialogue tends to take place or money conversations happen. And then in the middle, we've got a community area, and there's no real clear division between where the coffee house is and where our staff sort of lingers. And then there's this community space. We have bleachers where we have events in the middle of it. So you've got this life on one side, money on the other, and then there's really no clear line between where they intersect, because we believe that's the case, right? I mean, you can't put your money in a vacuum and make decisions independent of your life anyway. So, you know, Fast Company thought that was a unique way of going about sort of proving what we stand for in our physical space, and they wanted to learn about that as well as our business model. So we spent a lot of time talking about both.
Again, vision.
It's all about vision.
Yeah,
so
it is about vision. That's vision is what has moved your very from good to great companies that Jim talks about. That's what moves companies from good to great is vision, and then acting on that vision. If you don't act on your vision, you're just a dreamer. But a lot of people don't even dream. We've lost the ability to dream for some reason. Maybe it's the technologies. Maybe it's that we're speeding up. Maybe it's we don't think enough. But readers are leaders, and leaders are people with vision.
Interesting. So we're talking with Matt Hames. Matt's the CEO of Accrue Wealth, a comprehensive wealth strategy firm headquartered in Woodstock, Georgia. And he corrected me. It's not in Cobb County. That is in Cherokee County.
Well, I'm from Cherokee County. Now, we've got clients in,
absolutely,
in 27
all over
states.
The place. So. And we're also talking with Colonel Marshall S. Irvin, Jr., the commander of the 94th Mission Support Group out of Dobbins Air Force Reserve Base here in Georgia. And so I want to follow up on that, the seed that you planted, Matt. Because, you know, this whole unique concept that's been lauded and awarded, I wanted to kind of step back just a bit. So when you began this unique concept, what outcomes did you have in mind? So we're going to tap a little further into what the Colonel says or was your vision. What did you originally think you'd see from the customer's point of view? And I've got three points of view. So let's start with the customer's point of view.
Well, we started certainly with the customer's perspective, because at the end of the day, we were trying to identify really clearly a few things. You know, we started by trying to determine whose problem were we trying to solve specifically, and that got down into, you know, some of the dialogue related to, you know, who a target client might be, who might be someone who would ascribe value to what we were planning to offer the marketplace. And once you understand whose problem you're trying to solve, then you got to figure out what the problem is, right? So articulating that problem, you know, our hope again was to anchor this back to really changing the way people view money, enhancing that, and saying, listen, if we could, at the end of days, have it said of us as a result of interacting with that organization, with that brand, with those people, money's gone from a stress, a strain, a burden in my life to it's something that brings peace, joy, and allows me to live the life that I really want to live. And if we could do that, then we would have felt like we've achieved our vision. If, you know, vision, and I couldn't agree with the Colonel more, it's it really talks about where you're headed, right?
Right.
And there's a tremendous discussion, I think, that takes place in business around what you do. And unfortunately, and Simon Sinek has said it and said it well, you know, he wrote the book Start With Why, most everybody can tell you what they do.
Yeah.
Some folks can tell you how they do it. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, not too many people can tell you why. But it's those that can tell you why they do what they do. Those are the ones that truly engage the marketplace and the world with their vision and their heartbeat. And that's that's really, at the end of the day, what we're trying to achieve from the customer's perspective is change the way they view money.
So what you're saying for our learning community is that we should begin with answering the question to ourselves, why? Why am I doing this? What value do I add in the marketplace? Why am I so great? And what do I bring to those that are around me? And what can they expect from me? But why am I the one that can bring this to them?
Yeah, and at the risk of hacking Simon Sinek stuff too much,
yeah.
You know,
he wouldn't mind, I'm sure.
I'm sure he doesn't, you know, as long as I share his name, right? But, you know, he makes the statement that people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it.
Right.
They don't
I
buy
agree.
What you do, they buy why you do it. If you look at, you know, the things that some of the more significant global brands in the world that resonate at a large scale, if you look at how they've developed the culture of their team that works there, what they found is, you know, you've accumulated a group of people, not much different than what the Colonel's talking about in military service, that at the end of the day, they stand for the same things. They believe the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And building off that common value set, they then say, okay, given this, here's where we're trying to go.
Okay.
And when that type of belief system, and it sounds odd to refer to it as a belief system, but it truly is. When that type of belief system is exposed to the marketplace, it's going to resonate with people who believe the same way. So you get an opportunity to engage with people that aren't just purchasing your product or buying your service or being involved with your organization because of features and benefits. It's really more about what you stand for and what you represent and what, again, what problem you're solving for them.
Well, good. And as a matter of fact, I'd love to say we're starting with the customer's point of view in terms of what your vision was. So now, what has the outcome been? What have the customers been telling you based on your original vision and what you set out to build? Now you've built it, so what's the customer telling you that you've done for them or with them?
Sure. The feedback has been significant, and as I'm sure the Colonel could probably articulate better than me, all about measuring, right?
I mean, you do a lot of measuring.
You've got to measure. And many say, well, if you can't measure it, it didn't happen, right? So what we try to do is think through what are the key metrics as we look at our business model that we might measure to define success for us. Because at the end of the day, you know, you had to sort of nail success before you got going.
That's correct.
And what we're hearing from the customers, clearly we want positive feedback from our customers. We want those clients to feel like we've improved the interaction of their money in their life. But we feel like the proof is just as much in the volume of opportunities that we have to help them. So in a discipline like ours, where you're dealing with banking, investments, insurance, tax, estate planning, all these various verticals within the financial services industry, what we look at as a good measure of if whether or not we're doing our job is how many of those types of subjects are we getting the opportunity to help our clients with.
Okay.
So as we look at not just the new clients we've acquired, the new relationships we've developed, if we're only doing one thing for most of them or two things, it's probably a reflection that we're not truly exposing them or really doing what we've set out to do. But rather, if we're seeing a larger amount of opportunities in various subjects to help them in various fields, then we're doing our job.
You know, I'm listening to Matt, and I keep seeing these building blocks that I have written down in front of me, and he's going over all of them. The thing I just heard just now, he said, he's talking about listening. A leader is a good listener.
Absolutely.
A very good listener. He's not just one who hears, but he or she is one who does. A leader is also someone that is accountable. Accountable to themselves and accountable to their customers. Really, really, he said all these things, and I'm excited about hearing it. And a leader has the courage to tell the customer what they need to know and not just tell the customer what they think they want to hear to make a dollar. And that's what I'm getting from this conversation. These when people come to give me their goods and services, I listen for all these things and I listen for their vision, because they will just give you a snapshot of something to get your money. And a crew seems to me to be a company, a group of people that I would trust with my money and my well-being and going in a direction. And so he's continually rattling off these leadership blocks. It's important that the future leaders out there understand that they have to have accountability in what they do to their customer, to themselves, to their organization, and they have to be good listeners, and they have to make adjustments on the fly sometimes, and you will continue to grow.
Well said. Well said. So, and I know Thanks, Matt, sir. What is standing Appreciate in that. In the choir and saying amen.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we don't often think of the military as having customers, but I think you see it as that they do have customers. So when you think about the customer's point of view, I'll ask you the same question. What point of view do you think the customer has, and have you identified who is the customer? What's that point of view, and how does the military help to get the customer's point of view really fleshed out and really get it served the way it should be?
Let me quote this to you. It's the preamble of the Constitution. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, ensure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America. Now, for me, that is all the stuff that Matt was talking about, by identifying the customer, by identifying the customer's need. Mine just happens to be given to me by our founding documents. I memorized this a long time ago when I was a kid and tried to understand it and tried to grow it and tried to live with it. Now, my customer is the American people. And what does the American people want to do? They want to have
life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Whatever that may be, to say it's one particular thing, I believe is wrong. But my understanding of what I am supposed to be doing, I know my customers, the American people, my customers are allies around the world who we support and who support us, who want that same vision for not just themselves, but it says for ourselves and our posterity. That's our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. I want this thing to go on for another 500, 600, 700 years, growing and getting better as a nation, giving people from other places, legally, of course, and people living here, growing here. I want to give them the opportunity for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So my customer is everyone out there that's trying to achieve that. My product is protection, security, safety. My product is a peace of mind. These are all intangible things. My product is to allow opportunity to flourish, not just throughout this country, but throughout the world. Because when the world is doing well, our country's doing well, then we're partners in competition. We all understand what we need. We won't attack each other. We won't fight with one another. We will compete against one another. And from our competition, the world becomes better. The issue is when we have those who don't share our values, don't share our principles, don't share our founding documents. That is my product. The people of this country, our allies, and those who want to be our allies, those are my customers. And I am to provide safety, security, hope, opportunity, the feel for all those things. And Matt, along with what he does, he provides those opportunities to those people who need and who want to grow and want to be better. See, this military and business thing, they're not separate. We are an entity that works together. We always have been. The reason we are the greatest military in the world, because we have the greatest economy in the world. We have the greatest military leaders. We also have the greatest business leaders. So my customers are also our business leaders, to give them the opportunity to do what they need to do to make the country better, make it stronger.
So you see a great synergy between business and leadership, and there's no doubt about it.
Remember,
and military.
I'm a reservist. I've worked for four Fortune 500 companies. I understand the bottom line, and I understand that taking care of people, listening to people, providing for people is just good for business. Okay? And since I'm on this side, and I'm doing this now full time for a while, I realized that I could not be who I am. I would not have the things that we have on that base to protect us if it wasn't for a vibrant economy and for people like Matt, people like you, who are raising business leaders to continue that economy growing and spreading throughout this nation, spreading throughout the world. I am raising leaders to protect those things and make sure they're there for my children and my grandchildren when I'm long gone. Because he has to keep people growing. I have to keep people growing. We have to replace ourselves, another trait of a leader, to continue to learn and grow and replace ourselves, or else things are going to die, and that's not a pretty picture.
Yeah, and that's certainly not a pretty picture, and again, well said. So, Matt, any thoughts on that one before we move over?
Yeah, listen, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, listen, at the end of the day, the synergies that exist between – there's just so much to learn, right, between – you know, what the military does and does so well with such excellence, and what the business community is seeking after and trying to learn. I think it's a two-way street. I think there's so much the business community learns from military, and to the extent we can help contribute, you know, on that side of the equation, then all the more so. You know, I've been around enough folks that have just lauded how much knowledge and wisdom is gained from being exposed to leadership that has gone through our country's military. And I enjoy reading the things that I read. It always catches my attention when it's written by a colonel or a general, or because you just know before you even get into it, you know it's going to be extremely strong stuff, and you need to pay attention.
Yeah, and I noticed you did sit up a little taller when you realized that he was a colonel.
So. Well, I mean, you know, listen, hey.
Yeah, whatever. That and a cup of coffee.
So when we talk about the high potential leader, and of course, this is Global Leader Radio, and we are talking about what happens across the world, what passions must be present in an individual who is characterized as a high potential leader? And Matt, so what do you think?
Well, I mean, the first word that comes to mind for me is you've got to care about others. You know, at the end of the day, if it's all about you, that's going to be a problem.
Pretty shallow, isn't it?
It is, and you know, we anchor a crew to that, but just in general, I think that if it's if you keep others, and of the three principles that you values that you named to begin with, you know, service over self, I believe, was the second one that you meant. So, you know, it's about serving others. And I think that above all else, you've got to have others at the focus of what you're thinking. And then in addition to that, you know, and maybe even before that, I think to your point earlier, humility has got to be a bedrock, foundational, core value to what's present, to be an effective leader. There are plenty of leaders that aren't humble, but really to be an effective, transformational leader, a visionary, someone who really, as some have said, leaves a dent in the universe, who impacts lives. And I think that's the measuring stick, right? If you're impacting the lives of others, it can't be about you. And that's just an inherent humility that you're going to have if you want to be successful.
Okay, well, Colonel, we'll ask you to take the antithesis of this. So what should a high potential leader, one who's actually growing, what should that person be careful of or aware of?
Oh, the biggest thing that comes to mind is, which is the opposite of humility, is arrogance. You know, in your audience right now, I'm sure you have some very, very intelligent people in that audience right now, else they wouldn't be in the program.
Exactly.
In the military, we have some very, very intelligent people in higher places in our government and in our services. And I've seen some of these people, and I can say without a doubt that we have some pretty arrogant rascals. Now, it's okay to be confident. Please don't misunderstand the difference between arrogance and confidence. It's okay to be confident. I'm confident in what I can do. I'm confident in my abilities. I'm confident if you put me in the middle of a mess, that I'm going to fix it. And that's what I do. I'm a fixer. But I have worked on and I have been a victim of arrogance, other people's and my own. And I can tell you from that you need to be aware of arrogance. If you're intelligent, if you're smart, if you pick up on things easily, if you have charisma and you get people to see and understand what you're saying, if you have vision, but you do not have humility, you're arrogant, I'm here to tell you, you are in for a very, very long fall. And that can hurt you, and at the same time, it can hurt others along the way. Self-interest is another thing that you need to be aware of, that you don't fall into that. When I say integrity and service before self, it has got to be the service of others. When you look at it from a business perspective, it helps the bottom line to care about others before you care about yourself. You can talk or read about any business leader that's been in for a while. Those who are millionaires and multimillionaires, they were always concerned about their workers. And the ones who weren't, they fell. Yeah. All you got to do is look around, watch the news, look at the clippings, they fell. So arrogance and self-interest, be aware of them, please, very much, because you will fall, and you will fall hard.
Yeah, that's a scary thought. So what can business leaders learn from the military? And then I'm going to ask you the other side of it. What can the military learn from business leaders? Not what have we already learned, but in the future, what do you see as perhaps some areas that that first of all, business can learn from the military?
Leadership. That's our blood. You know, it's always, I see businesses, and Matt said it earlier, some businesses can tell you what they do. Some businesses can tell you how they do it, but they don't tell you why they do it a lot of times. And that's because they understand the techniques, they understand the processes, but they really don't understand that they need to build leaders. If they build leaders, leaders will tell you why. Leaders will take you to the promised land. Leaders will grow your business. Leaders will grow your market share. They will do it. If you develop only managers, all you're going to have is a business that hovers. It will be a good business, but as Jim Collins said in his book, From Good to Great, it will never be a great business. And what we do in the military is we practice, we build leaders. That's what we do. And I'm hoping the business world can learn how important it is to build leaders. Build leaders that manage very well. Don't build great, great super managers that really can't lead, because if they're just managers, they will not inspire. If that's all you seek to be, that is not a bad thing. Please do not get me wrong. We need managers. But it's leaders that bring companies, organization, entities to another level. It is not managers. Now, what we learn from business, I said earlier, our lean processes, a lot of those procedures and things we've learned from business. Mm-hmm. We bring them in because we're very, very, very effective at what we do. Like I say, we have to be more lethal, quicker, faster than the enemy. We managed to do that. All right. Now we need to make sure with the looming cuts, with the looming downsizing and things of that nature, we have to make sure that we are leaner and better and more efficient. And when you're making a dollar in a business, you have to be lean and efficient. And you all have a lock on that. We're pretty good at effectiveness. We're not as good as we need to be with efficiencies. And I push those things as part of management that I have to have in my organization because I am a base support. I run everything,
right.
The streets, the gym, the clubs, the electricity, the gas, the water, the security, all that stuff that goes on a base. When you drive through a base, everything you see.
That people take for granted.
Yes, I have something to do. And in fact, my saying is, my call sign is Mufasa. Everything that the light touches is my kingdom. And so I have to make sure everything is running efficiently and effectively because you taxpayers, you're taxed a lot. You expect that of me. I expect that of my people. Or I do what I can to get rid of them. Fix them first now. Then I get rid of them if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing to get fixed. So we glean so much from the business world. We're hopeful that the business world will hire veterans and see leaders who want to get behind a vision and just run with it and take you to a level you've never seen before. So if you're out there, hire a veteran.
It doesn't get any better than that promo. So Matt, what passions must be present in an individual who is characterized as a high potential leader?
Well, I think, you know, with the when you think about passion, you know, it's something that it oftentimes needs direction. I think to the point the Colonel just made, you know, when you're passionate about something, I think it's important to be able to anchor it. And when you find yourself with an opportunity to lead, or if you're challenged with a circumstance that that you're passionate about, I think the most important thing we need to keep in mind, and it's something that I've learned the hard way, is that passion's not enough. It's good to be passionate. You're going to be very frustrated and probably not be able to succeed without the passion. But if you're extremely passionate, facts are our friends. One of my best friends is always saying, you know, look, the facts are our friends. And it goes back to measuring, right? And I can be as passionate and articulate and motivating and inspiring as I want to be, but if I can't support and back up the passion with the data,
accountability
that proves that this is the right direction and here's why, you've got to be not just passionate about the vision, but and it's a little counterintuitive, and maybe it's why there aren't as many leaders out there, is that you've also got to be passionate about doing the homework and the data.
Exactly. Mm. The back work, background work.
Yeah. So it's quantitative plus the qualitative, right, that truly makes a great offering.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
We call it self-control. To go along with Matt's point, you have to be self-controlled. When you're in the military and you're in a place of authority, I am in a place of great authority and great power. Mm-hmm. And that humility and that integrity that we're talking about, along with that comes self-control. You can be passionate, but you have to have the self-control to do the homework, which is another building block of leadership. Leaders have to be self-controlled. You know, I can get people to do a lot of stuff. I talk and people listen. But if I can't go back and show them something after I've gotten them to work, to show them the results of what they're doing, they'll follow me for a while. But sooner or later, I'm not, you know, he's just full of hot air. It's a saying, he's just full of talk.
Yeah.
So it'll go along with Matt's point. Self-control is a really big block.
Okay. In terms of global leadership and being able to influence people, right? So I know, Colonel, you deal with this quite a bit, but I know, Matt, you probably deal with this probably more in a context than I would originally think in terms of female leadership versus male leadership. So I'll open it up to you, Colonel. In which ways are female leaders different from male leaders? Obviously, they're much smarter than us.
That's a loaded question. Your wife must be listening.
I'm glad he started with you. Boy, I'm gonna follow.
His wife must be listening. Well, I tell you what, I train my young leaders. I train my mid-grade leaders to not practice what I call CGG. And I want them, you know, in the military, we deal with a lot of acronyms. Mm. And you can remember CGG easier than you can remember anything. That's cosmetics, geography, and gender. If you are a leader, do not practice cosmetics, geography, and gender. Let me explain what that means. The best player has got to play. That's what I love about sports. You know, in order to win a championship, you have to put the best player on the field. In order to win market share, you have to have the best player on the field. Sometime the best player does not look like you. Okay, they don't have your cosmetics. Okay, and that's what something you need to be aware of that and stay away from it. Second thing, the best player may not be where you're from. You know, if you read the life and times and stories of Dr. Ben Carson, I find his book is called Gifted Hand. So it's also a television movie they did with Cuba Gooding Jr. as correct. Dr. Ben Carson. It's called Gifted Hands. Pick the book up and read it. It's talking about a kid that was raised in a single parent household. His mother couldn't read. And when he was growing up, his mother used to say, bring your homework in. She would pretend to read his homework to check in. She couldn't read. She didn't know what she was doing. At the same time, Ben Carson and his brother, one became an engineer and the other one became Dr. Ben Carson, one of the foremost neurosurgeons in the world. Okay? This man came from what we call today, he came from the hood.
Right.
Okay? He wasn't of privilege. He didn't come from a certain place. And you know what? Sometimes you have diamonds in the rough. But when you pay attention to geography, where somebody comes from, instead of looking at that person as a leader, you're failing. The last one, to your question, the other G is gender. Girls are here. They always have been here, and they're here to stay. And I'm going to tell you what, you know, I'm not – don't get upset, ladies, when I say girls, okay? I'm not politically correct. I deal in a world a lot of time of absolutes. Girls and boys, guys and gals, whatever you want to call it, ladies are here to stay. And some of the most effective people that I've had in leadership, leading with me as subordinates, as contemporaries, and even as superiors, were females. What? How are they different? They're female. That's about it.
That's it.
If they have the same goals, the same desires, and they do the work, they make the grade, and they get charged. That's just kind of the way it is. That's the way we need our world to be. The best player has to play in order to secure a nation, in order to build a business. If you look at CGG and you're practicing those as a leader, you will eventually lose. Now, you may make head some kind of way, and you may get ahead, and you may do well by looking at somebody's cosmetic saying, I don't want that person, looking at where they're from and looking at their gender and saying you don't want that person. But you know what? You're going to lose somebody very valuable, and that person's going to go someplace else and go win market share for the other company, maybe even your competitor, and maybe even take leadership and maybe even put you out of business one day. So you can't play those games. You can't play or practice as a leader, global leader, local leader, CGG, cosmetics, geography, or gender. Don't play that game. The best player has to play.
Well said. Matt, your thoughts?
Well, I could agree more. I mean, obviously, I think Colonel nailed it. I mean, from my perspective, I'm much more concerned with the condition of the heart and the mindset, right? I mean, whether it's a male or a female, at the end of the day, that just can't come into the equation. I mean, it, you know, to your point, the best player plays, and what you've got an opportunity to do if you're a leader is to really what you should be trying to do is understand what motivates the people that work with you, work for you, and that you work for. And if you can understand what drives their passion and their heart and if you can understand what their mindset is, the way they think about things, those are the deciding factors, their work ethic, the job that they do, the work product that comes out of their efforts. You know, that's the measurable, right? And I think that we've gotten to a place, and I'm sure that you know, there are many would say we're not where we need to be yet, and I'm confident that's the case. But
yeah, I agree.
But I think the truth is, you know, heart condition and mindset is much more important than gender.
Well, interestingly enough, you've also done great work with a crew in terms of the design of the building. So in early 2012, earlier this year, their crew retail location won the Best of the Best Retail Design Award from the International Interior Design Association, which is their highest honor for the retail space design, right?
It is. It is. And you know, we were blessed to receive such an award. And actually, to be completely accurate, the architectural firm that we partnered with to design our space won the award.
For designing your space.
For a crew. That's correct.
Well, you can take credit for that, though.
Well, you know, Patrick Johnson and Lucy Johnson of AI3 here in Atlanta is the firm that we used, and they're just extremely gifted. You know, as an architectural firm, what they did is take the time to understand what we stand for and what we believe. And they didn't begin by saying, okay, how many chairs do you need? What they started with was really, what do you believe and what do you offer? And how does your brand differentiate itself in the marketplace. And starting there, they begin to understand why we exist and then craft a physical location experience around it. So AI3 did a great job in that regard.
So your location is not part of a cookie cutter. In other words, there's not another one that exists that looks like yours, correct?
That's correct. One of a kind.
So with that in mind, I use that question really to kind of set this one up. So when you think about the element of challenging an established paradigm, which is what you're pretty good at, and what you've done is certainly in order to get to accrue wealth, what's the most important thing a person must understand?
Well, any time you're going to kind of beat your head against an established system, and I might submit that banking is one of those, right? People pretty well got in their head how this ought to work, and you've got plenty of organizations in the industry trying to innovate in a market, in an industry that is void of innovation over the last, call it 50 years. And in the last 3 to 5, you've seen a lot of innovation. But I think if you're going to choose to challenge an established paradigm, you've got to understand, again, back to the points that we've already made, you're going to have to be passionate about it because you're going to be told no a lot. You know, you're going to be misunderstood. You're going to be challenged. And I think the important thing that a good leader has got to be able to hold on to really early and really often is that you can't take the questions personal, right?
And you're going to get the questions.
You're going to get the questions. You're going to be doubted, and you're going to be challenged. And listen, you may be wrong, and that's probably just as important as having all your ducks in a row before you jump out there is understanding that you could be wrong and that there's going to be an opportunity to learn from what you've done wrong. And, you know, whenever you're challenging or changing an existing system, I think doing things like prototyping and failing fast and iterating on new concepts and new designs, I think what small business is learning and is being taught in some of your more forward-thinking entrepreneurial schools, whether it be a Georgia Tech, it be a Harvard, a Stanford, a Berkeley, and these guys, what they're finding is in
Kennesaw State University.
You know, so what you're finding is this logic that, as opposed to sitting in a room and trying to craft this grand plan and go out into the marketplace with what you hope is the right answer, having invested a lot of money, time, effort, energy into making it perfect before you ship it, is you get out there and you interact with the community first, and you begin to talk to your customers, and you talk to who that person that you're looking to interact with is, so that when you begin to go out there, you've got informed decision making that feeds into what you produce. And you know, at the end of the day, there's risk associated with challenging an established paradigm, and you're going to have some thick skin and be willing to do the homework, you know, before you take it on.
I would agree as well. And so I'll tell you what, one thing that our listeners certainly would never doubt is the passion with both of you gentlemen, with both the way you present yourselves and also the way you articulate your particular areas of leadership and concern. So starting with you, Colonel, why do you do what you do?
I'm built for it. Mentally, I'm built for what I do. I love what I do. I love being around people. I love seeing a plan come together. And wherever there's chaos, I just seem to gravitate toward it. So, you know, the world is sort of in chaos, and I feel my mission is to be where that chaos is, to do my part, whatever my part is. Here, I deal with at-risk children. That's chaos for them. I feel within me, some kind of way I need to try to bring order to their chaotic lives. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just why I do what I do. And I truly, being a child of the civil rights movement and growing up and being bused in 1971 to different places in the city and seeing what I saw then, how horrible it was and how people didn't want me in their schools, and still being alive to see things change to the point they have, I truly want this nation to remain great so that my children and hopefully my grandchildren, the Lord blesses me, I have any, have opportunities. I want to give opportunity to Matt to continue to grow his business and make it really big in this nation and make it globally big. So there's a lot of opportunities out there for my children and my grandchildren, but not just mine, for his and his grandchildren, and for everyone's grand, because when we're all doing well, life is good for everybody. We care about what the other one has, and we value it and we respect it. I'm just trying to do my part to make sure that remains here on the face of this earth. I'm passionate about that. And I'm passionate about his company growing and all other companies and companies that haven't been forged yet, companies that haven't been discovered yet, companies that haven't been invented yet, because you have someone out there in your audience right now that has an idea. And something that Matt said, something that I said, something you said, maybe some of your other guests have said, has inspired them to, you know, I'm going to go do that. And I want to have them to have the opportunity in a nation free to do that. So I continue to do it until I just can't do it anymore. Then I'm going to go do something else. So hire a veteran.
Matt, why do you do what you do?
You know, Alvin, I was asked that question about 2 months after we opened a crew. The location, and it's been an amazing thing that God's done in my life over the last year and a half, 2 years. Because what happened was I was doing an interview, not dissimilar from this. We weren't on the air, and asked a lot of questions about a crew, and you know I was checking them off. I got it down right. I can nail the story. And about 45 minutes into the interview, the reporter asked me. She said, "So who is Matt Hames? Why do you do this?" And I watched myself lock down and not be able to articulate really my own purpose and calling in the same way that I could my business, which really bothered me. Mm-hmm. So I really spent some time, effort, and energy sort of praying through what it is about me that causes me to do what I do. And at the end of the day, you know, I feel like God made me to lead change that endures. When I think about the things that fire my passion, the giftedness that I have, and the opportunities that have been placed in front of me, if I get an opportunity to challenge, inspire, and be involved in a transformation, those three things, well, I tell you, I lose track of time. I lose track of time.
I
enjoy it. I'm passionate about it. And it's not just in any context, again, to go back to, it's about change that's going to endure. You know, whether it be me teaching Sunday school and hopefully teaching truth, out of God's word into someone's life that may affect them for the rest of their life and their family, or if it's through the vocation that I find myself in, helping people with money, partnering with them to, you know, help them get their money and their life correctly aligned. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's really what I've been created to do. And the things that I learned while I was at Kennesaw State, being exposed to the small business and entrepreneurship curriculum that we've got at the Coles College, it really fired a passion in me to create something and to create things, and it's fun. You know, we find ourselves right now at a crew as part of a significant relationship. Our parent company is Community and Southern Bank, mm-hmm. and Community and Southern is about a $2.3 billion community bank here in the Metro Atlanta area, and Pat Frawley is their CEO, and I'm amazed at the alignment between the vision that I've cast for a crew and what that bank stands for and what they want to achieve. And it's not an easy day for a bank right now, particularly a community bank, yeah. You know. And it's a time where leadership is needed. And I'm really excited about what we've got a chance to do going forward. So that's why I'm here. It's why I do what I do, is I really want to impact people's lives. And if I can help lead for change that's going to last, then I feel like I'm going to be all right.
Well, I appreciate that, and I know you gave us quite an insight into some of the things you're doing in the community as well, and I know, Colonel, you just kind of touched on it briefly, so I'd love you to take a little bit more time and embellish what you're doing with At-Risk Kids.
Well, whenever I get the opportunity, I was working with a foundation that basically got them together and helped them to see another way of life, because that's really, really important. Because I said in that group of children, you have a Dr. Ben Carson. You have a Martin Luther King Jr. You have those types of people. You have social elites. You have technical elites. You have people over there that our society will tend to throw away. Mm-hmm. But if you show them something different, just like in this instance, Ben Carson, he was in love with classical music. Now, classical music was not the thing of his day in his neighborhood.
Right.
But he was in love with classical music. And instead of playing Marvin Gaye in his boombox, he would play Tchaikovsky or Beethoven or Chopin or Schubert or Rachmaninoff or something like that. He'd be playing these types of things. You expose these children to things You expose them to plays. You expose them to symphonies. You expose them to concerts with jazz music. You expose them to medicine. You expose them to science. You expose them to museums. You expose them to a lot of different things. And all of a sudden, things click. You can look and see things click.
Mm-hmm.
And they get it. And all of a sudden, they want to know more. And then if you can just hold them for a little while, if you can hold them and get them out of their environment, and that's the hard part. And, you know, we need businesses to come into and in with some of these organizations.
Community efforts. Yeah, that's right.
To help these kids, because these kids, man, some of these kids are just magnificent. You know, we see it every day when you look at football teams and basketball teams, those obvious things. You see those kids that can run fast or throw something fast or jump really high, right? They come right out of the hood. Mm-hmm. But what we don't see is we don't see doctors. We don't see the next Clarence Darrow. We don't see lawyers. We don't see politicians. We don't see
mathematicians.
We don't see mathematicians. We don't see astronauts. But they're there. They're there. They just haven't been exposed. And, you know, I guess in the end, kind of all I want to do is, and you know, I'm with Matt a lot, and that God's allowed me to be where I am and doing what I'm doing to change something for the better. I realized that I never knew what. The military just gave me the opportunity to go out and see things and see that my environment wasn't the only thing in the world, but to see there was a big world out here, to take what I've learned and how I know it and to help others. So however that is, whether I'm in a uniform or whether I'm dealing with kids or whoever I may be dealing with, whether I'm building up my troops, because it's a big thing to build up my troops, because they have personal lives too. Remember, they're citizens.
That's right.
They're not just military people. They're citizens, to build them up. I am here however God wants to use me to try to make things better. And I'm like, man, I want to make them last.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. So, Matt, and really both of you, what are you doing to ensure you continue to grow and develop as leaders?
You know, I read a lot, and that's tough. I've got a very good friend of mine who reads just as much, maybe more than me. And the challenge that we have is remembering where we read what. I don't know if you ever run into that.
But like, oh, yeah. I have that issue.
Yeah, because you know, but I feel like the more I consume, it's become a little bit of an addiction. I have a hard time sitting. I love to read, and I enjoy just consuming content of all kinds. I enjoy teaching. I mentioned that already. I really enjoy teaching the Bible and teaching finance. You know, it's something that I enjoy. I find that the more I can find myself around people like both of you guys, and listening to what others are doing to better themselves and to impact the world that they find themselves in, you know, it helps me consider differently what it is that I'm doing. You know, I enjoy connecting dots. So my wife makes fun of me, but it's turned into a little game. I love to find a metaphor in anything, right?
Yeah.
So
what's the lesson?
It's just fun. There's
exactly.
Something in
that's
there,
the
right?
Lesson.
There's
a
principle there. Yeah, there's something in there, right? So I enjoy looking for that, and I think there's something to be learned in most anything we're going to bump into, whether it be good or bad. And, you know, the game is to pull it out and see how I can apply it. So that's fun.
Well, that sounds good, because what I've always heard is the two things that will influence you the most in life is the books you read and the people you interact with.
That's correct. I agree.
So as I look over to the Colonel. Tell me a little bit about what you do to ensure you continue to grow and develop as a leader.
I have the same addiction that Matt has. I love to read. You know, it gets kind of ridiculous because I walk around and get books, and I stack them up. I see them, especially at a good price. Mm-hmm. I just grab them, and I buy them, and I stack them up, and then I keep buying. I buy more books than I can read, but I always read. My wife just recently bought me for Father's Day. She bought me a Kindle. Which a Kindle Fire, which is a really good thing, and that can be a problem too. Financially, you tend to buy all those ebooks and stack them on.
It's real easy to load up, I'm telling you.
But readers are leaders, and a lot of times the thing you can offer most to people who are in a situation is something to help their mind escape. When your mind is ready, when your mind is prepared, your mind is continuously focusing on looking what it's ready and prepared for. So, you know, they say that luck favors the prepared mind. That is so very true. It's not so much luck, it's opportunity. God wants us to be prepared when he calls us for whatever we're doing. And we get prepared by studying the Bible. I do that quite often. Mm-hmm. Try to do it every day. Mm-hmm. I teach. It's like Matt does. We got so much in common. You know, we just met, but we have so much in common with that. And I love to teach, but I love to read. Reading just keeps me fresh, keeps me going. And there's, I don't read fiction. I wait till the movie comes out.
Understood.
I'm not going to read The Lord of the Rings. I'm not going to read Twilight. I'm not going to read Harry Potter. I'm sorry. I'm going to wait for the movie. I'm going to sit through the movie for 2-3 hours, but I'm not going to read that. I read biographies, autobiographies. I read self-help. These are the things I read. I read about people's lives. I read about people overcoming things. And it gives me the passion to tell people, you can overcome. You can be if you really want to, but you can do it. I am a product of that. I had no idea when I was growing up that I would be sitting in front of a mic talking to an audience of I don't know how many people.
Millions.
Yeah, millions of rock fans.
Global leadership.
I had no idea. All I know is I wanted to be something and do something with my life one day. And it started with reading. It started with school. It started with geography. And what about this and what about that? Then finding books in the library. Then getting me a little job. Then getting books when my friends are out partying and doing stuff. I'm reading something. And then when opportunities come, because my mind is prepared, I'm much easier to flow into that opportunity. You may not have the opportunity now, but you must continue to prepare your mind.
And then we end up having to call you Colonel. So now my final question for you, because I'll tell you, we could sit down here and have this conversation. It could go on for several hours, but I know you are very extremely busy, and we greatly appreciate you having taken time out of your busy schedules. So we'll make your answer to this question available on our web posting. So as I prepare to ask you this question, I want you to give some thought to which book has most impacted your leadership ability. And we'll start with you, Matt.
Well, there's always been a bunch, and, you know, outside of God's Word, outside of the Bible, which is going to be the foundation for what I do, I would say from a business perspective, I ran across a book that is really helped transform the way, it's going to sound odd, that I articulate and communicate what we do. And it was written by a lady named Nancy Duarte, and it's called Resonate. And it's just a really, really solid read, and it's, you know, Nancy runs a firm that is a communications consulting firm. So she consults on public speaking and presentations.
Yes.
And the book is a study of how the greatest communicators of our time have communicated a message that has tended to resonate more than others. What was it about Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech? What was it about, you know, when Steve Jobs unveiled the first iPhone, I think it was in 2006 at that keynote. What was it about that speech, about, you know, Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, you go back through John F. Kennedy's, these unbelievable orators and how they articulated what it was they were trying to get across. She's found that there are patterns and there's things to learn that you can see in how they told their story. And it's really been fascinating to me. I've taken it and applied it to multiple areas of our organization, and it's been a helpful book. So Resonate by Nancy Duarte is a really good read.
Fantastic. And so, Colonel, we'll ask the same question of you. Which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
There's a lot of them, but the one that really just grabbed my attention is called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John C. Maxwell. He's here in Atlanta. He has Enjoy, the Enjoy Group, and he has a couple of other businesses. But that book just turned me upside down the first time I read it and reread it. I say if you're going to start to be a leader, pick up The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. Of course, after you read the Bible. I agree, Matt. He's dead on with that. I mean, I couldn't articulate that better. But if you want a book that's going to help you, he has a pattern and a method in his book. He'll tell you a story, but he won't tell you who it is. And when you get to the end of the story of each one of these 21 laws, it's somebody we all know. And it's usually somebody big. For instance, the McDonald brothers, the one he called the law of the lid. I'll just give you that one. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the McDonald brothers that made McDonald's famous. It's a man named Mr. Kroc.
Ray Kroc.
Mm-hmm. And the McDonald's brothers started off how we see Burger King, McDonald's, Wendy's, assembly line.
Franchising.
Yes. But it was Ray Kroc that did the franchising. But the McDonald's brothers could not get past it. They became very wealthy. They became well-to-do, but they could not spread the name McDonald's. The name McDonald's Brothers was mainly just in California. Then a man named Ray Kroc came along and saw the business potentials. He had a vision to do this, and he didn't take a salary for years. And he started selling these franchises, which became McDonald's restaurants.
Right.
And the law of the lid is sometimes you have a lid that you cannot lift because you don't have the capabilities. You have to get people to help you to lift the lid, to help you to get or help an organization get to the next level. And he has 21 of these laws, and it just fascinates me and excites me and causes a great amount of passion for me. Anybody that wants a precursor to becoming a better leader, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John C. Maxwell. It's a good precursor to start your leadership journey.
Well, I'll tell you, gentlemen, this has been extremely great. It's been a great fun time. And so on behalf of our learning community, we've learned a lot from both of you, and we appreciate you accepting our invitation to join today. So I'd love to have you back on the show sometime whenever we can get our schedules coordinated and synced up. Is that a deal?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to. Anytime.
I like it. I can't lose in this deal. So with that in mind, could each of you tell us how our learning community can contact you by email and or by phone?
Sure. You can contact me at Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L dot Irvin, I-R-V-I-N, at us.af.mil. That's my military address, and I'm usually there all the time. And you can call me at 678-655-4873. My secretary or my executive officer will answer that phone because they screen all my calls.
my best way to get me is email or phone, and my email address is mhames@accruewealth.com. That's ACRUWEALTH.com. That's my email, and my direct line is 770-517-1235, and would love to hear from anyone.
So with that response, we'll bring this edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. Special thanks, special holiday thanks goes out to our fantastic producer, Mr. Kevin Finn. He's the man responsible for making us all sound good, and he actually gave me a little bit more time today, so this particular holiday edition went a little longer than normal because we had such great leaders sitting across from me in the booth, too. So, Kevin, thank you a bunch. So we invite all our listeners to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. Also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. Special thanks goes out to Mike Quinlan, who recommended that you come in.
I love Mikey.
Yeah, he's a great guy. So for those of you interested in our award-winning Executive MBA program, please go to the EMBA icon on our Global Leader Radio site to connect to us and to sign up for an information session. So join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So happy holidays and have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.